Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Will religion ever become obsolete? I hope not. The only way I could see religion becoming obsolete is if humans became extinct, which certainly may happen given how we are treating Mother Earth. If we became absolutely extinct and artificial intelligence ran the world, or if we became extinct before there was artificial intelligence that could run it and we just went back to an age of fire and then an age of who knows, then maybe there wouldn't be a need for religion at that time. But as long as there are humans, and as long as there are humans who are struggling, and as long as there's human ignorance and human illusion, and our karmic packages that we're all trying to work through, religion's important. Now, it doesn't mean dogma's important. It doesn't mean boxes are important. It doesn't mean that it's important to necessarily worship God in a particular way, by a particular name or form. It's certainly a choice that a very large percentage of the Earth's population chooses to do. But it's not necessary. And that's where the whole religion and spirituality break seems to happen. That's where you get more and more people these days who say things like, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. Now, to me, as a spiritual person and a religious person, when I hear that, it makes me feel like, as religious people, we have failed. Because ultimately, religion should be that which brings you farther on a spiritual path. Religion should be the way that we unfold and awaken and grow spiritually. But what's happened is that religion has become, in too many ways, dogma and boxes. And people get tired of it, you know? I mean, you spend most of your day at the office being told that there's something wrong or lots of things wrong with how you do your job. Then you come home and you're told by your spouse or your parents or your children that there's all sorts of other things wrong with you and how you do things. Go to the gym and the trainer tells you again all sorts of things that are wrong with you. And then you think we've got this little bit of free time. Do we necessarily want to sit in a situation where we are voluntarily then saying, okay, God, tell me all the things that are wrong with me? And since so many religious traditions and practices and teachings seem to be rooted in what's wrong with you, it doesn't actually surprise me that these days people feel like, you know, as it is, I just spend enough hours of the day being told there's something wrong with me. I'm going to spend my free time doing something else. I don't need to hear it again. So I get that. But that's obviously not what religion's about. It's just that that's how tragically dogma has sort of emerged as a way to control people, as a way to make people be like sheep when we want them to be, make them feel badly enough about themselves that they'll do whatever we say. But that isn't really what religion is. Religion at its core is that which awakens us, which brings us close to God, not a God who thinks there's something wrong with us, but a God who has created us, not just by the Creator, but of the Creator, a God who sees God's self in us and sees us with love and oneness. An eagerness that we should wake up and see the truth of who we are so that we can become one again with God. So I hope that before too many people decide they're not religious but they're spiritual, that those of us who are spiritual and religious can learn how to share religion in a way that makes people know this is about your spiritual practice. This is about the divinity of who you are. This is not a dogma. It's not just rules. It's not just good and bad, rewards and punishments. That's how religion gets co-opted. By people who don't have your highest spiritual awakening in mind, but who just have power in mind, or money in mind, or whatever else people are co-opting religion for these days. So, religion is precious. I'm so incredibly grateful that I have found religion. I was not raised religious. I was not religious in my youth. But having a spiritual experience, non-religious, but a spiritual experience that became a religious experience and brought me onto a path of religion has been the greatest gift ever. So, no, I don't think it'll go obsolete. Not until we all really wake up and really know who we are and merge so fully with the divine that we no longer need a system that helps us do that because we've already done it. That would be the only way I'd like to see religion become obsolete, is we've already merged. We're there, we're one, we're fully aware, fully connected, so we no longer need the path. But until then, we need it. It's a really good point that he's raised, that the youth today seem to think religion is just rituals, which is why so frequently they're turning away from it. And how do we make them know it's not? Well, we make them know that it's not by how we live. Too frequently, we live based only on the ritual. Ritual for ritual's sake. Cardinal Toheye. But what's the deep meaning behind that in our lives? Sometimes we tend to forget that. One of my favorite stories about this is many years ago, Pooja Swamiji and I were in South Africa in a city that was about, if I recall, about 400 kilometers from Johannesburg. Some beautiful devotees, very, very devoted, wonderful family. And we spent a night there, and then we were coming back to the Johannesburg airport the next day. And the evening before, we had planned what time we'd have to leave in the morning, how long it would take us on the road, what time we had to get to the airport. And Sube, at the time we had decided we were going to leave, the husband and wife are sitting in their mandir doing puja. They had been doing puja already for quite some time. still doing puja. So I was about to go in and remind them, and Puja Swamiji gives me a signal, like, just wait a few minutes, it's okay, they're finishing their puja. And then 15 minutes goes, 20 minutes goes. Now, I was raised on a personal level in a family where if you weren't 15 minutes early, you were late. As in, if my dad told my mom he would be home at 7, by 6:45, she was already looking out the window going, where is he? So 15, 20 minutes late, that also for an international flight we had to catch. So finally, Puja Swamiji says, okay, say something, Kyunki, we're going to actually miss our flight if we don't leave. So I go in and I just very quietly and humbly say, you know, chalnahe, nikalnahe, time to leave. And they give signal like, yeah, we're coming, just let us finish puja. Okay. So I go out. Another 15, 20 minutes goes by. I go in again. Yeah, it's okay. Finally, we end up leaving an hour and a half after we had planned to leave. We get in the car. So Puja Swamiji says, do you really think there's even any point now? Like, if we're going to miss the flight, we might as well stay here rather than, you know, go to the airport. But I really have to make the flight because there was actually something back in India that we had to be at. And the man says, oh, don't worry. He says, didn't you see how good the roads are? It's this, you know, massive highway, flat roads. They had this latest model Mercedes car. And he said, easily I can go 200 kilometers an hour. You won't even feel it. The roads are so good. The car is so good. So as we find ourselves zooming, literally, down the highway, Puja Swamiji, ever so gently and lovingly, as is his way of teaching, he says, so do you think God is really going to be that happy with your puja if you kill your guru on the highway? And I love that because they were incredible devotees. It wasn't that they were trying to, you know, make us late or that they didn't care. I mean, they were full of love, full of devotion. But sometimes we lose sight of actually how are we putting that devotion into practice. Like, let me go through my entire full, the long version of puja, even if it means that I'm going to actually end up, you know, putting my guru's life at risk, rather than realizing that driving my guru to the airport slowly and safely is our puja. And maybe that was the morning where you just dia jalaya, pranam kiya ek phool rakha or chal pade. But we as the elder sometimes, we lose sight of that implementation of our teachings in our life. And we become very stuck with rituals as well. You see, so frequently people doing the ritual, but they're on the phone. Arti karahi kasi se baat karahi, on the phone also. Or, you know, checking their WhatsApp in the middle. Tell me, do minute my card though, may I go cut them card? Puja naptake for apse bat karungi. Like, it's amazing. Just the vocabulary of like, let me just get this thing done and I'll call you back. It tells you how we are taking these things. The children these days are being raised in an educational system that is much more Western than Eastern. Meaning, in my school, we were taught not just to memorize, not just to be obedient, not just to get right answers, but actually the whole theory of the school was, their whole principle, was in getting us to learn how to think on our own. So We never had multiple choice questions, true, false. They were always essay questions. And even if you got the answer wrong, if you gave a very good explanation for what you thought was the answer, you wouldn't get 100%, but you'd get, 80-85% credit because your way of thinking was good. If you never raised your hand and asked a question in class, you'd lose points. The teacher would say, any questions? No one would raise their hand. She would then call on. She'd say, okay, so now you tell me what I've just said. And if you couldn't, she'd say, then why didn't you ask? So we were encouraged to ask, to debate. And I mention this because it's slightly different from the typical Indian system of education, an Indian system of culture where children are meant to and taught to just be obedient. Sit down, shut up, speak when you're spoken to. Don't ask questions, don't talk back. And it works as well as obedience in a culture, respect for the elders. But the dilemma becomes when the children then end up in Western education systems. We come from the Indian system. The kids come home from school and they're asking questions. Now, to a lot of people, that seems like it's rude. How dare they? Kya samajhte aap apne aap ko? Who is this child? Thappar maar de usko? Kaise pucha? Maine kabhi nahi pucha. You know, you're doing something, the kid says, or you tell the child, jara tilak lagao. Maybe there's a murti in the home, maybe there's an image, a picture of your parents who have passed on, you tell them, tilak lagao. And the kid says, why? Thappar mara usko. Kaise pucha? Now, he or she was not trying to be rude, but they're being raised in a system that says, ask questions. And I actually think it's beautiful because it gives us as the elders the challenge and the opportunity to actually learn the answers. In many cases, tapard isliye mara, because we don't know the answer. It's a lot easier to teach the kid, just do what I say. Or they ask and you say, the answer is because I told you so. Like, what kind of answer is that? Well, it's the answer of someone who doesn't have an answer, but wants obedience and doesn't want to admit that they don't have an answer. So it gives us an opportunity to learn the answer. Why do we put tilak on? Why do we do pranam? Why do we do parikrama? Why do we light a diya? Why do we do aarti? Why do we offer the five elements in puja? Does God really want your flowers? Like, why do we offer them? What's the meaning of all this? And it's beautiful because the meanings are so powerful and so profound. But in many cases, we don't know them because we never asked. Our parents said, tilak lagao, humne laga diya bas, baat khatam ho gaya. We never asked. Now we have the opportunity to actually learn. This was one of the big motivations, actually, that made Pooja Swamiji, now 30 plus years ago, start the Encyclopedia of Hinduism project in the United States. Because at that time, it was, mid-late 80s, and there had been a massive movement of Indians into America in the late 70s, early 80s. Their children were going to school in America, coming home and asking a lot of questions. And the parents didn't have the answers because they had grown up, in many cases, in small towns and villages where they obeyed. They did as they were told. Nobody asked questions. It was considered rude. Pooja Swamiji says he never asked his guru a single question. He got it from being in his presence, which is incredible and amazing and beautiful. But the education system that our children are getting now, whether they're getting it in India or they're getting it in London or in LA or New York, the system has become very similar. And of course, they're all on social media. And on social media and everywhere, what we're being taught is be skeptical, ask questions, do your research. Don't just accept a fact because, you know, there's fake news. And it's actually great. I think the more that we can actually understand and make decisions based on our understanding of them. I mean, I know I've always been like that. My parents tell a very funny story of when I was in nursery school. So I was 4. And the teacher was telling everybody to clean up the art supplies that we had been playing with. And I didn't want to clean up. I've never been very neat. And I wasn't in the mood to clean up. And she came over and she said, "You have to help clean up." And I said, "Why?" Now, I wasn't trying to be rude. I really didn't understand why I needed to put things away. And she sat me down and she said, "Because tomorrow, when you want to play with these things, if you don't put them away now, you're not going to know where they are. You won't be able to find them. But if you put them away today, then tomorrow when you come in, you will know where to find them." And I went, "Oh." And immediately I jumped up and started helping to clean up. Now, this is how our children are being educated. Ask. Now, at that point, it was only nursery school. I think I kind of came into the world with this. But if they're given answers, and answers that make sense, not only will they do it, but they will do it with bhav. They will do it with feeling. They're not going to do it just as ritual. These days, the youth are not doing things they don't believe in. You can't corral them. They're independent thinkers, which is beautiful. And what it gives us this beautiful challenge and opportunity is, great, let's give them something to think about. Let's give them beautiful reasons. We see it with vegetarianism all the time. Hindu youth, particularly abroad, "Why do I have to be vegetarian? My parents say it's because the cow is holy. I don't think the cow is holy. Why can't I eat it?" Parents, Tupper Marthi. Right? They don't have an answer. "What do you mean the cow is not holy?" But if you can say to these kids, "Well, you don't have to believe the cow is holy. That's okay. That's up to you. If you are interested in knowing why we think she's holy, I can share that with you as well. But even if not, we are vegetarian because the meat industry, animal agriculture, is the single greatest contributor to climate change. Our kids care about the environment. They care about climate change. It's one of the greatest causes of world hunger. It takes 16 times as much grain to produce beef than to produce vegetarian food. If I've got 16 pounds of grain, I can make 16 loaves of bread, 16 pounds of rice or pasta, or 1 pound of beef. Which means every time you eat beef, you're literally saying, 'I deserve the food for 15 other people.'" And the youth go, "Oh my God." And they become vegetarian because they get it. They're not rude. It's not that they don't care. They care deeply. And if we can give them reasons to do things that matter, that mean something, they do it. And so we now get to learn how to implement rituals in our life, the meaning behind the ritual, and we get to learn the beautiful reasons why we do all these things. to inspire our children. Because ultimately what we want are youth who are inspired, not youth who are obedient. Obedience doesn't get us nearly as far as inspired gets us. But it just takes a little bit more time and energy on our part.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
In terms of what you said about the friends and loved ones, means being with them is taking the time and energy and you don't have the time and energy for the path, or that the way that they are with you or the way that they want you to be is different than your path? The second one. Okay. So this is another beautiful and important question, which is, we walk a path, a spiritual path, we start on it. And then our family members or our loved ones have agendas, have desires, have hopes, have patterns that pull us off the path. And so it becomes very difficult to be on the path and also together with them. This is something that a lot of people face. Now, it's important to realize your role, your dharma, your duty as a loving and compassionate friend, son, husband, brother, father, whatever role you play, it is not to prevent other people from having to face their own agendas, their own desires, their own fears, their own ignorance. Ultimately, anyone who loves you would encourage and support you being on a path that's going to take you to greater awareness, greater expansion, greater truth, greater bliss. Anyone who really, if their only agenda was you should be happy, deeply happy, in peace, deeply in peace, they would support the path. The problem is, our loved ones are humans, right? Chances are your puppy doesn't have a problem with you on the path. Or your goldfish. It's the humans. So the humans have agendas. And when we embark on a path, a spiritual path, many times it threatens their agenda. Maybe it threatens their agenda in terms of the type of job we're going to get, the type of lifestyle we're going to live, or maybe something as simple as we've decided that we no longer drink alcohol, and the friends we used to go drinking with don't like that. So whatever it may be, our path threatens them on some level. Their agenda, their desires, their own issues. Which means that they're going to do whatever they can to prevent you. But your role is not to ensure that no one who you love ever has to face their own stuff. Then you're just helping them literally live and die, never having grown or expanded. When I made the decision to move to India, wasn't what my parents wanted, or it wasn't what my mom wanted. My dad was very supportive. He didn't have any agenda, but my mom had an agenda. I was going to live nearby, and I was going to pop out a lot of babies. And in her mind, I would be happy doing that. It wasn't that she wanted me to be miserable, but in her mind, that was how things go. When it became very clear that that was not going to be my path, it was absolutely hard for her. But what happened over the years, and it actually happened very quickly, I mean, within a period of just a few years, not only did she recognize and realize that I was on a path and there was nothing she could do, there was no bargaining, there was no threatening, there was no manipulation, there was nothing she was going to do to change it. But even more than that, what she realized was what a gift it was. And I remember her saying to me, I had been in India maybe only a year and a half, 2 years. I mean, it was brand new. She said to me, whatever you're doing, she said, you're doing something really right. Because just being near you, I feel so peaceful. Now, for a mother to say that to her 20, at that point I was 26, 27, year old daughter, that's huge. And as the years went by, not only did they become supportive of me, but it actually changed them. And having to face, I had an agenda, I had a plan, this is what my life was going to look like. I would have, you know, a whole bunch of grandchildren sort of running at my feet. That was what my mom had envisioned. Having to look at that and realize, okay, so that wasn't the plan, brought her onto such a deep level that it actually transformed her. And people who have known her over all of these years have watched that transformation. As I have transformed, she transformed. And so you sacrificing your path because it makes someone else uncomfortable, not only is a disservice to you, but it's actually a disservice to them. It's saying you are so weak that you can't handle having to look at your own attachments, your own agenda, your own issues. And so you need me to sacrifice my whole life just so that you don't get uncomfortable ever? Well, that's actually kind of an insult to someone. I mean, we think we're doing it to be nice to them, but it's actually an insult. I remember my mom once saying to me in the beginning, I don't even remember the context, but I remember she said, you know, I'm a lot stronger than you think I am. And it was so beautiful because I thought, yeah, of course you are. And silly me forever really thinking that there was anything to do other than exactly what we've done. Walk your path. Because when you walk your spiritual path, yeah, it's going to make people uncomfortable. You're going to get people to say a lot of things. When I first decided to move to India, after I had been here and had had these amazing experiences, Pujaswamiji sent me back to America, back into my PhD program. He told me it was just to actually finish the degree, but actually what it was, which he later explained, was he said, look, you need to go back and show people that just because you've had this experience doesn't mean that you are any less capable of getting straight A's in school. He said, because look, people always want to not live a spiritual path most of the time. Most people are looking for excuses not to live a spiritual path. It's a lot easier to live an eat, drink, and be merry type of life, right? I mean, why get up and meditate if you could just hit the snooze button and sleep? Like, why bother, right? So people are looking for excuses not to become spiritual. And he said to me, look, if you don't go back, your whole life people will look for ways to write you off. They will say she had a nervous breakdown. They will say she was brainwashed or she joined a cult or she ran away. Something happened, she couldn't handle it. He said, and if you're going to be here as someone who chose the spiritual path over that life, you have to make sure that no one can write you off because you will be then a model of the actual benefit of this life, that it's not just for someone who's run away or can't handle it or had a breakdown. He said, and for that, you need to go back and keep succeeding, keep thriving, showing them you're not brainwashed. You didn't have a breakdown. And you are actively, consciously choosing this life. Because that's hard for people to accept, because then it's a mirror in their own face of why they're not living a spiritual life. If you really have the option to do both and you choose spirituality, well, then that's a mirror in the face of others. It's like if you choose not to drink for a spiritual reason, well, that's a mirror in the face of everybody who continues to go out and get drunk every night. And nobody wants that mirror in their face. It's so much easier to convince you to drink than to look in the mirror in their own faces. But that's not your duty, to make sure they don't have to look in the mirror. So walk your path and have faith that your family and friends, like the family and friends of everyone who has walked a spiritual path forever, will learn what they're supposed to learn from it. They'll go through what they are supposed to go through from it. And your path will create a space into which other people then have the courage and the inspiration to walk their paths. And it'll show the people you love, hey, I know you're strong enough. I know you can take it. I know you don't need me to just keep you comfortable.
This is OTRFM. Part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul. every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavathy Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
There's a whole neural circuits and patterns in neurology and chemistry. I won't go into all of it here, but around issues of reward, right? We know that we have specific neurotransmitters in our brain that pump into our brain as we get rewarded. Now, what we think is going to reward us varies. So for someone who smokes cigarettes and is addicted to cigarettes, put them on an 8-hour airplane where they can't smoke. They finally land. Okay, the airport is also non-smoking. Right? So the whole brain is going, oh my god, okay, 20 more minutes till I can smoke, 10 more minutes till I can smoke. And they're, you know, the whole engine is going. When they finally sit on a bench, you know, 20 feet out of the airport where they're allowed to actually smoke, they're not getting flooded only with the tobacco and the nicotine from the cigarette, but they're getting flooded with all sorts of reward hormones and pleasure hormones. Now, if you take someone who doesn't smoke and you make them smoke, they're going to cough, they're going to hack, it's going to hurt, it burns. They're not going to have reward hormones or pleasure hormones. So it's not dependent upon the thing itself. So much some is. You know, you put a piece of beautiful milk chocolate in most people's mouths and the pleasure hormones and reward hormones are going to go for most people. But a huge percent of it has to do with not the thing itself, but the story we tell ourselves about it. And so the less you engage in it, the more you free yourself from that circuitry. Slowly, slowly, even addictions get broken. Addictions are, you could say, kind of the end of the spectrum of a craving. You could have a mild craving, then a medium craving, a strong craving. Then you're actually addicted. But even addictions can be broken. Cigarettes, alcohol, drugs, food, gambling, whatever it may be. We can free ourselves of addiction. So as you free yourself, as you don't give in to the craving, a whole new way of living emerges. That thing stops having power over you. And you develop new ways. So let's say, for example, that you've got a craving. Let's stay with the example of the pastries. Okay. So you've got a craving for pastries. Let's take this guy. Go back to the story. The guy who gets off the bus and he buys the pastries, craving for them. Well, if instead he could develop a conscious habit, get off the bus and start to feed the birds, bring some bread from home in a bag, get off the bus, there's always lots of pigeons right there, and start to feed bread to the pigeons. Or get off the bus and start to chant a mantra or recite a prayer. Okay, it's a 10-minute walk to my office. This is how many rounds of my mala I can do while I walk. This is how many times I can recite that prayer. Or get off the bus and become very mindful. Use the 10-minute walk to be fully mindfully engaged. Or use it to write poetry. Every day I'm going to write a poem in my mind, maybe only two lines. But by the time I get to my office, I'm going to have a poem. So you, in the beginning, you give yourself something else. The craving arises. What do you do instead? Because just sitting there and, you know, having your fingernails going into your hands, it works. Eventually you'll overcome it. But it's a lot easier if you can give yourself something instead. Something that's also enjoyable, something that also is going to give you a little bit of the pleasure and reward hormones. And then slowly, 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 that craving will disappear. And not only will the craving disappear, but your identification as the one who craves, as the one who's out of control, who doesn't have the ability to not give in, that also changes. And that's really powerful, because then you know, yeah, I am disciplined. I don't give in to my cravings. I have control over my mind. And then other habits, other cravings, other patterns, you find that you're able to break free of them as well. Because most of us have a lot more than just one craving or one bad habit. Take one. And what you find along the way as you free yourself from that is you develop the strength to free yourself of others. Because then suddenly you are the type of person who doesn't give in.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
How do you know if you've attained moksha? So Pujaswamiji always says, it's not like you grow horns. Because it's actually quite a common question. Well, how do you know if you're enlightened or someone's enlightened or awake or moksha? He always says, it's not that suddenly you get horns or you look different. It's like that beautiful, beautiful teaching of the seeker who goes into the jungle looking for this enlightened master. He arrives at this small hut where the master lives, and he knocks at the front door, no one answers. He hears some noise in the back, so he goes around. And in the back, he sees a man who's cutting firewood. And he says to the man, I'm looking for the master, I'm looking for the guru. And the man keeps cutting firewood. And the seeker says, can you help me? I'm looking for the master. Finally, the man stops cutting firewood and he says, "Some people call me that." And the seeker is amazed, like he's just this man and he's cutting firewood. And he says, "You're the master?" And he says, well, what are you doing? He says, "I'm cutting firewood. And after that, I'm going to go collect water in my bucket." And the seeker's like, "This is enlightenment? Cutting firewood, collecting water?" And he says to the master, "Well, what did you do before you were enlightened?" And he says, "I chopped wood and collected water." And the man says, "So what's the point of all of it?" And he says, It's not what you do. It's who is doing it. Before, it was I who was cutting the firewood, chopping the firewood, and collecting the water. Now, wood is being chopped. Water is being collected. It's just a change in the experience of the who and the experience of the how. How are we doing things? And who is doing them? There's a very famous book by a beautiful meditation teacher from America called First the Ecstasy, Then the Laundry. And I love it because, I mean, I love the book as well, but the title is just so perfect. It's by Jack Kornfield, because it's not, "Oh, I'm enlightened," and then suddenly my laundry just, you know, does itself. You know, I become enlightened and I develop these powers and suddenly, you know, give me a pair of clean socks and it just arrives in front of me. You know that you are free. Moksha means freedom. You know that you've attained it when you're no longer stuck. When you no longer are a slave in any way, shape, or form at any time to your own past habits or patterns or identities, to the ego, to desires, to fears, to attachments. Doesn't mean you don't live. You live. You absolutely live, but you live free. Because you're not stuck. Most of us spend most of our lives very stuck. We're stuck in the games of the mind. We're stuck in the grass is always greener game, right? What that one has is better than what I have. Right? Everything always tastes better from someone else's plate. Right? You go to a restaurant, someone that you're eating with orders something, you taste it, it's great, much better than what you've ordered. Next time you order what they ordered, but amazingly it doesn't taste nearly as good. It's when they ordered it. So even in just little ways, but also, of course, in the big ways. As long as there's something wrong with this moment, you're not free. When you're free, you'll know it. Not because your wood will chop itself or your laundry will fold itself, but because you will chop wood and collect water and fold laundry as a free being, not thinking, "Oh my God, I cannot believe the stupid maid did not show up today. Didn't she know I needed some clean socks?" Because there's no difference between you and the maid. You're one. So the what stays very similar, the who and the how changes drastically.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.
Come on.